Hi, I'm Sophie, Marketplace Risk's AI assistant. Welcome to Series 9 of the Platform Podcast, hosted by Marketplace Risk founder Jeremy Gottschalk. The Platform Podcast features marketplace and digital platform founders and leaders sharing valuable lessons that can be leveraged to help you successfully launch and grow. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not professional advice. For specific issues, please seek an appropriate professional or contact us at info@marketplacerisk.com for a referral.
Welcome to the Platform Podcast. On this episode, I'm joined by Chelsea Howard, Director of Trust and Safety at Sittercity. Founded in 2001, Sittercity is the first marketplace for childcare, including babysitters and nannies. Today, Chelsea and I are going to be discussing her top five tips for trust and safety professionals. Chelsea, it's a pleasure to have you on the Platform Podcast. So I hope I introduced you well, but can you talk briefly about your journey to becoming the Director of Trust and Safety at one of the largest childcare platforms?
Yeah, thanks so much for the introduction. Super excited to be here. So I started at Sittercity back in April of 2016, which feels like a lifetime ago, in customer success. I had just entered the world of startups and the corporate world, coming from a background working in childcare, pet care, and law enforcement. I actually have an educational background in criminal justice. And I, during my first year at Sittercity, discovered the world of trust and safety and knew immediately that is where I belonged. I was trying to kind of find where I fit in the criminal justice space, and I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
So when I first started, Sittercity didn't have a dedicated trust and safety team. We did the work, but it was divvied among customer success representatives to be processed throughout the day at different times. I kept asking for more and more work related to the trust and safety space and eventually found myself and, another woman had broke off and started the trust and safety team in 2017. This was only about a year after I joined. Mm-hmm. Shortly after that, my colleague within the next year moved on to another opportunity. And so I moved forward with leading the trust and safety initiatives along with a new team member. In that first year, we learned a lot. How hard the work was, how to manage and grow a team and a program, and how to ensure the workload was managed in a sustainable way. So we now have a team of six and continue to grow and expand.
We have some similarities. I mean, one of my degrees is in criminal justice, and I actually went to law school as part of a pediatric law program to represent abused and neglected children. And there was, it was hard to find the place where all of those things converged. And so for me, it was very similar. It was, I wasn't going to go into law enforcement, but really right. had that. Perspective and also kind of focusing on children and vulnerable populations. So that's that certainly could explain why we've worked together so much for about 10 years. So thanks for that. Let's get started. As I mentioned, you and I worked together for many years. In those years, what is almost a decade now, we've navigated the development of trust and safety at Sittercity, but also as a profession and an industry. So I thought it would be great to have you on today to talk about your big takeaways through this evolution and kind of general advice that you have for trust and safety professionals. So we talked about this obviously before. I'll give a preview of kind of five lessons, five takeaways, and then we can discuss them individually. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
Okay, so I'll tee these up. We're going to talk about one, preparing for the worst. Two, getting leadership buy-in to trust and safety. Three, how to inject trust and safety initiatives into existing workflows and projects. Four, the need for cross-functional partnerships and communication. And then five, the overall scope of trust and safety. So with that menu, the first thing that I want to discuss is the prepare for the worst, this concept. Talk to me about what you mean.
Yeah. So, when I'm introduced with a new potential product or process or policy, I let my imagination run wild. You just think, what if, what could happen? You need to, what I call, put on your bad actor cap. Think like a bad actor. how can they subvert anything that you're trying to do? And how can they take advantage of it?
Right.
You know, and then it's important to present these thoughts to leadership and working groups, even if they look at you like you're crazy for thinking up the scenario. I mean, like, I've gotten some looks or really, that's a very odd scenario comments. But the fact is that even if it's not likely, it could happen. Right. And I think it's just, you know, in this world and in the environment and you know, when you're thinking through these processes, it's important for everyone to understand the potential risks within your product so that it's, you know, a well-rounded, informed decision can be made about how to move forward. And I know leadership also appreciates if you, you know, don't just come into these conversations with no, no, no. I have always been like, I'm the negative Nancy. I come in here and I shoot everything down because of this could happen or that could happen.
Right.
But one thing that I've learned over the years that is appreciated is if you get information prior to the conversation about what is being looked at and what is being researched, and then you come in with these scenarios, but then you also come in with a plan of how to combat that exactly. potential issue and mitigate that risk. You know, if they do choose to move forward with the product at hand, then that way you're helping to provide a solution and you're not just saying no, 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 no.
Right. Yeah. I think a couple things that resonate with me. Number one is when people ask me about risk management with platforms, the interesting thing is it's not like an established industry like oil and gas or something like that, where you've got so much data and you've had so much activity for so many years that you know the likelihood of the different variations of bad things that are going to happen.
Yep.
We're still in the first few innings of these technology platforms, and therefore we're learning and seeing a lot of these bad things. So it really does take an imagination to think like a bad actor and to think, how could somebody in your wildest dreams or nightmares misuse, misappropriate a platform, a tool, functionality? Because there are people who are frankly making it their full-time jobs to do that. Yep. And if we're not thinking like them creatively outside the box, then we are probably missing, you know, who knows, 20, 80% of the potential harm. And then the other part of that is, as a lawyer, I'm always also known as the no person, the profit killer, the deal killer. Yeah. But what I've also found, similar to you, is if you come with solutions, number one, paint the picture clearly, communicate it clearly, and then come with solutions, alternatives, workarounds, options. It's not only it doesn't paint you as the bad person or as the negative person, but it also puts the onus on the team to think this through for themselves. So it's not just no, it's no, but, or no, here are some options. So it's more collaborative than great, we have to go to negative Nancy again to get another no, and then, you know, figure this out. So I think that's a much more collaborative, way more helpful approach. And I think that in the early days of trust and safety, when we didn't know what we were doing, right, we were kind of playing whack-a-mole. And yeah. Now we're so much more proactive and we have that opportunity to kind of see around corners and be helpful, come up with the solutions and not just shoot things down.
Yeah, for sure.
So one thing that we've been talking about a lot lately, and we're actually working on a research project specifically on this, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, but getting leadership to buy into trust and safety, and specifically, talk to me about how you get leadership to buy into new trust and safety processes and tasks and workflows.
Yeah, I think a lot of leadership folks appreciate, just like you mentioned, statistics and data, because the data doesn't lie. So, you know, if you learn how to prioritize based one on the company's needs and present that in a way that your audience will understand, but then also present to them the information surrounding it regarding the data that you've collected over the years or whatever you can find. If you don't have that, you know, if you're a startup or just starting out, communicate, you know, with other trust and safety professional folks and see, you know, kind of what their process was. It makes those conversations. And I actually just had one earlier today with our product lead. And, what do you guys need to get me the ability to prioritize these things? And so just learning, you know, what the company needs, presenting in a way the audience understands, because just people not in the trust and safety space don't think like we do. We're the subject matter experts. We should present ourselves as such. And kind of in addition to that, a lot of the work we do can easily seep personal emotions in. And that's one thing that I've also learned over the years is having the ability to separate that from what needs to be done for the good of the business as well. So right. Making just like this well-rounded, thought out, not a gut reaction of, oh my gosh, this is going to happen. But then again, kind of what I spoke about earlier, which was, you know, making sure to understand how it plays into the business as well and not just how you're thinking about it.
Right, right. And I think that obviously data, statistics, that's all super, super helpful if you can get it. In some cases, we get it, right? We can A-B test it. In other cases, we can't. And in some cases, we do such a good job, there's no data because nothing bad happened, but you're like proving a negative. So you've kind of backed yourself into this corner. The other thing is, it seems to me that if somebody on the product team comes with a development that or a functionality that is going to generate revenue or engage users better, the question is always, great, how much do you need? But when trust and safety comes along with an idea to prevent, maybe it's even a very small problem, but it's a serious problem. Statistically, it happens very few times, but it's serious. The question becomes, great, how much is this going to cost? And it's just a different perspective. And so I think to your point about, you know, understanding like the organization's mission, the North Star, what the kind of the direction of the mission, and then leveraging that for the argument is like, this is how it's going to help us achieve that. This is how this feeds into the business purpose or the organization's future or goals, et cetera, I think is very, very helpful. Because if like I've learned one thing over the years, it's, yes, scary stories are helpful, but if you can convince people as a team member of the organization that we're all on the same team and that we're all marching in the same direction, and this is how these initiatives are going to help, it tends to, I think, be more productive. And it's more part of the team, an integral part of the team and the product and the organization than, again, that like negative Nancy, like, oh gosh, we're going to get another no or another negative response.
Right.
So another key hurdle for trust and safety professionals is kind of on that point is inserting themselves and their initiatives into roadmaps and workflows that are already ongoing. So not necessarily something from the ground up, but something's ongoing. And, you know, talk to me about you see an issue and, hey, we got to get in there. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So oftentimes when I come into, you know, some type of cross-functional meeting or planning meeting, I'm coming in and looking at what is being discussed and how I can loop in the work that I have in my backlog or my requests into what is already being planned and processed. It's just a really great way to get a lot of those backlog requests completed. You know, just popping in there and saying, you know, well, as long as you're working on that, I have some thoughts around how we can improve trust and safety within that space. So we might as well include that work with the work that you're already doing. And, you know, I know sometimes I don't necessarily know the scope of what it's going to take an engineer to do a job. I think it's going to be easy and quick, and it's really not. There's some, you know, extra stuff. So oftentimes I will come in and say, you know, I will at least at the very least present the ideas or pull them in when they're being discussed. And then if a subject matter expert, for example, the engineering team comes in and says, oh, wow, that's just going to be a lot of work. You know, I take their word for it. And at least I brought it up and, you know, we talked about it. The more the more you talk about these things and bring them up, the more they will be top of mind for everyone and not just you. And getting those eyes and ears, you know, out there, it's a really great thing to have.
Right, right. And I think the ability to continually communicate the impact, and again, if you've got data, that's great. I know we don't always have data, but the ability to communicate the impact and tell the story and how this fits into the bigger mission, I think, I don't know if you had the same feeling, when it came to trust and safety, I would think, gosh, I repeat myself a lot.
Yep.
But you kind of have to, because, you know, it's to some degree like a tail wagging a dog, right? The organization is there to provide its service or to match for whatever, sell goods, et cetera. It needs sophisticated trust and safety focus, processes, et cetera. But it's not a trust and safety organization. It's an organization that does X that really has trust and safety built into it. And yes. So going along for the ride, being able to communicate. And I think what's super important, which is really what I want to focus on, is that cross-functional communication. What you said, I think, supposes that somebody knows of or is aware of the roadmap, is communicating with other departments, other functions. And so what I'd love to understand from you is, how do you do that? How do you, you know, what does that communication look like? What does that partnership look like on a regular basis so that you're not just coming at either the 11th hour with your hair on fire or a list of 45 things that just don't fit anywhere?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, again, that's just one thing that I've learned over the years, is that cross-functional partnerships are super important and so necessary. Having started and grown the trust and safety team, you know, obviously we were not involved up until that point in every single conversation that had been had across the org because we didn't exist yet.
Right.
So as I've grown with the team, I've learned that, you know, if you're currently at a place that has a structure with silos where you're not being involved until very late in the game, or there are things being released prior to getting in front of you, work on tearing those down. Just insert yourself in as many conversations as you can, even if it doesn't seem like it pertains to you, because mm-hmm. Again, let's be serious, like trust and safety pertains to just about everything in right. some way, shape, or form. And I think, you know, obviously it's never of any ill intent that you're intentionally left out of conversations or planning. Everybody's always trying to figure out the best balance around your resource of your time, because that's what's valuable, right? And I've always told people, you're not bothering me. This is my job.
Right.
and you know, I'm more than happy to have these conversations and make sure that we're making well-rounded decisions. But also if you're in the know about planned or potential upcoming work or initiative, that gives you the opportunities to plant those little requests previously mentioned within that work. So, you know, it's kind of like kindling in a fire where, you know, the product team or, you know, whatever team, or use product as an example, has this new project that they're going to work on, their little fire, they're building their little fire. And then you're like, okay, I'm just going to stick my little trust and safety kindling over here and over here and over here. And it helps to keep the fire going because, you know, you're improving the process by adding that information. And I actually even wanted to speak to earlier when you spoke about, you know, the question of like, oh, how much is that going to cost us? This cross-functional partnership really has opened up a lot of ability for me to go to team members directly and ask, what do you need? And like I mentioned, I was speaking with one of our product leads, and she actually gave me this scenario of, you know, companies and leadership like to look at, what's this going to bring to me? What's the revenue going to be that sure. I'm going to get? But we can be looked at as what's referred to as a revenue protector. And so, you know, she's like, show how you can be a revenue protector in this space. And I said, oh, that's an interesting take. And, you know, without this cross-functional partnership and my right. feeling like I can come to her and ask her these things. I never would have heard about, I mean, I might have eventually, but like it's just helping me to understand how to get things taken care of.
Right, right. And I would even go a step further to say that we've seen certainly together, there are opportunities to generate revenue. Yeah. You know, sometimes there are tools and things you can monetize, great, different screening options, et cetera. But I think also when you think about the trust that you develop with a platform, with a community, over time, the network effects, the word of mouth, all of that starts to feed that kind of flywheel, kind of all of the community buzz. And it actually does turn into revenue when the reputation of the platform is so positive. It's known for having really solid trust and safety for the platform, looking out for their users, doing the right thing. So I agree, you know, the common thought is, great, here come the profit killers. So at a minimum, let's try to protect revenue. But I think that there are many examples as well where the trust and safety function, especially when it's leveraged cross-functionally and there aren't silos, can really help revenue. I think it's not as quantifiable, right? So people need to sometimes be a little bit creative, but you can do, you know, the net promoter scores and things like that to understand how people view it. And so there's certainly ways to do it. But to your point, I think that all starts with breaking down the silos and really working cross-functionally. Which leads me to a somewhat unrelated question, but I think back in the day before the pandemic, when everybody was in the office, these conversations were certainly facilitated, you know, through the office much easier. Have you seen changes in that, and or what have you done, or what do you recommend people do to keep those conversations going, to keep in front of people that you might not have regular conversations going, you know, on a weekly basis, or may not be a part of a meeting? Is there something that you've done in this kind of new hybrid / work from home normal to make sure to keep those cross-functional relationships alive?
I mean, honestly, if things go quiet for too long, I start individually pinging people, right. Just making sure that, like, hey, just wanted to check in. I am happy to offer my input here if you guys are discussing anything. If, you know, I know at this point what the how the work goes as far as planning. So when we start to plan for different quarters and things like that, and if I'm not hearing, but we've gotten actually really good. I haven't really had an issue with it in quite a while. But at first, I would say, especially getting into the digital world of like virtual existing, it was a little bit of a rocky road. And it just, I think just you kind of have to build some thick skin. You just have to be really persistent and poking your head in a lot. Sometimes I would even peek around on people's calendars and see like who's meeting for what and what's going on here. But just like building those individual relationships, knowing who owns what is super important as well. I would say those are the things that I've done.
Excellent. No, I think that's super helpful because especially a lot of trust and safety folks who are getting in the space now, it looks different certainly than it did 10 years ago, but also than it did 3 or 4 years ago. So just understanding what cross-functional means and engaging with people in a virtual or work from home or hybrid world, really what that means. And sometimes you just got to get in front of people. I think it's good anyway. I don't even, trust and safety aside, I think that in an organization, relationships, all of that, it's super helpful just for your own success, the organization's success. But in this space where you could be siloed, you might not be prioritized, you might not be called into every meeting to be a part of every meeting, you know, it's your opportunity to get in front of people just by sticking your head in their calendars if you want. that's public. Okay, so last one, flying the helicopter up 30,000 feet. Talk to me about the scope and the size of trust and safety and like what it entails for somebody who just isn't aware, is a very early stage, a founder, kind of what do they need to know?
Yeah, I mean, I think coming into this space, I did not realize how big the scope of trust and safety is. Trust and safety is such a blanket term for a lot of different areas. And a company that has a small team could have a lot of responsibility fall on the trust and safety folks. So it's just important to advocate for yourself and your team, that you're not just doing one thing or focusing in one area. You're all encompassing. You're the eyes and ears for legal, policy, the program, team leadership, content, et cetera, et cetera. There's just so much that it entails. And, you know, I do know that some larger companies have these areas parsed out into separate teams, but many don't, especially those that are just starting out. And I think a lot of people just don't understand the mental load that many of us in this space carry. And I think that's where the advocacy and being heard is important. Mm-hmm. You know, just being like, look, you know, I'm going to help you as much as I can. I might miss something because I'm a human and there's a lot of things that I'm trying to monitor over in my corner here.
Right.
And I think sometimes folks might get a little frustrated with me because as a product starts to come to fruition, I start to throw more wrenches in because I see more things as it starts to get built out. And they're like, well, you didn't mention that at the beginning. And, you know, that I'd come in and say, well, that's just because I didn't see it until I saw, for example, the user experience. Mm-hmm. And even after it's built and released, sometimes, you know, you don't see things until right. after the fact. But being able to have those types of conversations and hold yourself accountable is super important too. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, like for the, I just too want to say for the companies that have these areas stepped into or separated into individual teams, it's also important to be consistently communicating with one another as all of these processes are intertwined, right? You want your compliance team communicating with the, the legal team and the policy team, just because everything works all together. So just to continue to operate like a well-oiled machine, that's super important. And it helps prevent potential unintended consequences from a new policy product process, having an adverse action on a team or even your user base.
Right. I think that the one thing that is super helpful, potentially in an organization that isn't necessarily inviting trust and safety to the table every time. It's an opportunity, and I've seen this before, where you can just say, hey, I would just love to see what you're doing. I'd love to, you know, be along for the ride. I would love to just be able to see around corners ahead of time, because that will help us, you know, shave off some time. If there are any issues, potentially I can solve the problem or come up with solutions or options before you get to the point so that we don't skip a beat or we don't miss a beat, however that goes.
Yeah.
because I think that that's a super efficient way to not only get close to the folks, right? Yeah. So that communication stays going back and forth, but you also are, you know, you're not the one who's impeding any development. And the other thing is, I think we all know, is wireframes and Figma and all of that, it only provides a certain perspective, right? Until you see something fully functional being used, there are things that come out of the woodwork that you just can't anticipate. And frankly, nobody probably anticipated, let alone trust and safety folks. And so being along for the ride and engaging in that and testing it and being, you know, you find new things, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even historically too, there have been times where this was quite a long time ago, again, kind of when we first started to form the team, a product was fully hashed out. And then I got invited to a meeting saying, we're releasing this like tomorrow. And I'm like, no, you're not. And, you know, that I think these types of things sometimes need to happen in order to get you that regular seat at the table. But it can, you can help prevent that from happening by saying, look, if you don't invite me to these things or include me in these cross-functional meetings, then we're going to get to a point where we do a lot of work for no reason, because there's something else that we have to do and we have to pause on release. So nobody wants to pause on release.
Right. And I think the message is, let me help you, right? Yes. Let me help you. We all have the same goal, mission, vision, et cetera. And so let me help you. Well, that's all super amazing advice. I want to thank you for joining me on the Platform Podcast, and good luck on your continued journey through trust and safety.
Thanks so much. I was happy to be here.
Thank you for tuning into the Platform Podcast. You can check out more episodes at marketplacerisk.com, along with information about our conferences, virtual events, and resources designed to help marketplaces and digital platforms successfully launch and grow. Don't forget to follow us on social media @MarketplaceRisk to stay up to date on upcoming programs, events, and important news.